This is a tripod broadcast.
Well, let's start recording, so...
We just did.
Okay, cool. I think this is a key show to listen to because it's all about emotional masturbation. Journalistic integrity.
It encapsulates everything that we're about.
And I'm sorry.
Now, give that some thought.
Yeah.
With Addison.
I can't be mad at you. You got a haircut.
And Matt.
I would recommend that you stop listening right now.
Oh, that's kind of bullshit, I think. I'm just not learning to write this show.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude's won Emmys for his writing.
On The Newsroom?
No, on The West Wing.
Oh.
Because that was Sorkin.
Well, I guess he feels like he's let somebody or whoever down.
They got to him. They got to him, man.
The man got to him?
The global elite.
Mm-hmm. is that going to be...
They said, apologize, you would never work on TV again.
Is that going to be the title of the show, The Global Elite? I'm sensing a theme based on your notes.
Matty Cakes versus The Global Elite.
I hate to break it to you,
mm-hmm.
but they're probably going to win. I mean, they're global, man. You're not global. I guess you are with a podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
The level playing field now. All I need is an infinite amount of power and money and.
Influence, yeah. Anyways.
Now this, what I do have in plentiful supply, an infinite amount of sadness.
They'll never top your sadness level.
No, they won't.
The global elite, they can't even come close to the
sadness.
My sadness
tank
level.
Is always on F. It's always on full.
Yeah.
Never runs out.
Now that we've started the show on that dark note, welcome to Give That Some Thought, Tripod Broadcasting's flagship show. I'm Addison. Joining me is my co-host, a man who has an infinite amount of sadness, Matt Hume.
Hello, everybody out there in audio land. How are we doing today? Yeah, I have an infinite amount of sadness. But to go with that, I also have an infinite amount of joy because I'm a human being who can experience a whole spectrum of emotions, being both finite and infinite.
No one knows what you're saying.
My mind is limitless. Like that movie, Limitless.
What a turd of a movie.
That really was a stupid movie.
What a steamy turd in American cinema that Limitless was. Anyways.
It was like if Brad Cooper and Robert De Niro, they didn't just phone it in, they texted it in.
and they used typical text like you for you, mm-hmm. and you are for you, yeah.
For you are,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And yeah. like all every scene where they have to emote, it's just emoticons.
I saw a tweet the other day that I thought was pretty funny, and you'll get this, and maybe some of our listeners.
But
will.
I think that movie suffered from a good plot or a good idea poorly written, anyway, and poorly executed, anyway.
No,
I'm
I think
sorry.
So too. And well, yeah, I was going to say I saw a tweet the other day that I thought was pretty funny. It said I downloaded a Christian emoji app for my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, it's just one icon, and it's a side hug.
By the way, let's do another podcast that I'm
a
fan of called The Reasonable Doubts.
We don't listen to other podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Other podcasts don't exist. But if
only but, ones on Tripod Broadcasting.
Exactly.
By the way, Frozen Pizza's back.
I did listen to the fifth episode.
Did you? The whole thing?
I listened to the first part of it.
Yeah, I listened to it last time. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
They talked about Corey did a little bit of stand-up. About 5 or 8 minutes of stand-up. Yeah,
I saw your tweets. About the stand-up thing.
Yeah, I guess he did it at like an open mic at his school, and it was really cool.
Freaking Chicago's the place to do it.
Yeah.
More than L.A., I think, for stand-ups. Like, I think Chicago as a city is more receptive.
Chicago or suburbs of New York, I would think, yeah.
Yeah, I think Chicago even more because it I think it's a little bit of a warmer place than L.A. or New York.
Well, yeah, and it's big enough that because if someone's doing an open mic in L.A. or a stand-up or whatever, mm-hmm. I feel like you're coming on stage and maybe I'm wrong, I've never been there, but whatever, but I feel like the premise is, oh, you're trying to get on TV.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like you're in this town, and yeah, you're bartending or whatever, but that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And that's not bad, but I think there's a certain lens that people see you through based on that.
I think Chicago...
I didn't wind up closing that window.
No, you didn't.
We're gonna keep the routine of someone always getting up.
Go ahead.
In every...
Chicago comics and Chicago... Yeah, you're closer to the window. Sorry. I got it last 2 times.
It's your house, though.
Not it. For those listening, I just touched my nose and said, not it, real fast, which means he has to do it. Because that's the law according to the rules.
According to the rules of Give That Some Thought.
Yep. Anyway, I was listening to another podcast called Reasonable Doubts, which is an atheist podcast I really enjoy. A friend turned me on to it a couple months ago, but they were talking about, they spent the entire episode talking about the movie God's Not Dead. This new Christian movie that just came out with starring Kevin Sorbo as the atheist professor.
Yeah.
But yeah, they made a McGee and Me reference, which tickled me to death because like...
Not many people watch McGee and Me.
No one knows about this. This show that we knew about from our childhood.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
McGee and Me was a staple. And
It's
an animated cartoon based... not based off of, but it's done by... it was done by Focus on the Family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty much what you would think. McGee
Adventures in Odyssey for Nerds, because it was about this smart kid who would build these interesting contraptions and inventions, and mm-hmm. basically this nerd who played with Legos all day, and he had a sketch pad, and he drew an animated character, and it came to life.
Oh.
Yeah. Tells me that me from McGee and Me, I forget his name, Nick maybe, the main character.
Maybe, I don't remember.
He was schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he had a cartoon character, he came to life, no one could see it but him.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was seriously...
Clearly some issues there.
He was into the drug scene way too early for a Christian kid, or maybe should have been on some medication.
Right. One of the two.
Yeah. Clearly...
The show's writers never really...
They didn't really flesh that part of the story out.
Right. Never really felt that out.
Yeah, it was more about heartfelt Christian messages than it was about... Anyway, they made...
Esoteric
this,
drug use.
Yeah, they made right. this incredible... They made this incredible side hug. Joke
oh, about
yeah these two Christian teens doing the side hug,
yeah,
like, and that they stressed like that was as physical as these two teens got in the movie was these teens who wanted to get married, right, who were
right,
they were pre-engaged.
Oh yeah, sure. So promise ring stage,
exactly. Freshman in college, and they did this side hug. It was pretty funny. Anyway, your side hug comment reminded me of that, but
I make a point to even at church, friends of my wife's, people that are our age, women, I make a point, if I'm not really a hugger, I don't immediately go for the hug when it comes to interacting with people.
Sure.
But if the time is right and it's appropriate and there's a hug involved, I'm getting you, I'm both arms all the way, I'm bare hugging it.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. And there's no, and I make it clear there's nothing sexual there,
mm-hmm.
except with the ones I want there to be something sexual there.
Yeah. I don't... I'm not a big hugger of women. It's just like that.
That's Twitter profile bio right there. Not a big hugger of women.
Here it is. I am a man of passions, Addison, yes. Todd.
Yeah.
And those passions mean that I'm either at 0 or 60. There's no in between when it comes to me and the ladies. The romancing of the ladies.
You don't do the whole like try and do contact, like small the back, touch on the knee, touch on the arm during a laugh. It's either
only
it's
when
either
I'm
nothing.
Accelerating up to 60.
Exactly. Just on the way, yeah. As the pedal goes to the floor.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not just about to touch the gas lightly and, I mean, lead this young lady down a path of sin and temptation and the ravages of her own imagination, you know, thinking about my sexy chubbness.
Right. There is a lot to love.
It's,
as I sit across from you, I can make that assessment.
Pound for pound.
Pound for
I
pound.
Weigh more than most guys. Not more than most Americans, though. I'm average.
You're talking about most guys on the planet.
Yes.
In our ecosystem.
I'm American average.
Right.
When it comes to weight. But enough about me being fat. Welcome to Give That Some Thought.
Yes, it is. It is Earth Day.
Is it?
I think so.
Yeah, no, it
or
is.
Was it yesterday?
I don't know. One
I don't
or two.
Know. It was also...
Who cares?
Sunday was Easter.
Yeah.
He has risen. Real quick discussion. Well, let me say this. So my social feeds on Easter were filled with primarily three things. Number one, people calling Easter a pagan holiday and talking about how we shouldn't celebrate it.
Yeah.
Number two, your standard, he has risen, stone was rolled away.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, stoned Easter Bunny jokes. That was pretty much...
Because it was 420.
Of my social feeds, that was the primary content. But having said that, what I want to ask you, let's take a look at the resurrection for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You do you believe that Jesus rose on the third day, physically rose from the dead?
Well, then I would have to say whether or not I mean, if I believe that, then I would, that leads me down a logical path to say I either believe or don't believe in Christianity, which is something I don't want to say on the show.
Well,
not because I don't want people to know my
so.
faith, but just because I don't
I just mean historically and in the context of Because I don't know that it necessarily
was it a possibility? Sure.
Well, with the 500 people that saw him, I guess I'm asking more. Do you think it's a reliable account that of the resurrection? Not necessarily. I'm not asking what it means to you.
Yeah.
I mean.
So is the Bible a reliable account of the resurrection?
See, I'm not really asking about the in terms of scripture.
It seems to be a loaded question, no matter how you approach it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to unlock.
Unless you
it.
Want to take a definite stand on the issue.
Right.
And, you know, I've said before, I'm a pendulum, and it swings back and forth between agnosticism and evangelicalism, or agnosticism and theism, and it's hard to tack that down for me, because I don't know. And I'm perfectly fine with saying I don't know.
So, well, then based on that, so the answer to my question would be
I don't understand it all, but I want to.
But the answer to my question, based on what you just said, your answer would best be formed as it would take faith to say whether he did or he didn't.
Yeah, I think it does take faith to say, I believe the resurrection.
And whether you have that faith or not is your own business.
But,
Okay.
I don't know that I do have that faith. I think at times in my life I did, and then I didn't, and then I did again, and then I didn't, and now I'm kind of back to where I kind of don't, but it could change. I don't know. It's just one of those things that...
Right.
Personal faith is a quagmire.
Yeah. And I don't know, because if I said that to people, for example, at my church or in my family, I don't know. I think that would be met with... not a very welcome. I don't think it's a problem that it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see the problem with having to reasonably argue with your own mind, and if you want to use a biblical term, argue with your own flesh in the things of faith, because you're built with a presupposition or with your flesh that tells you all these other things and these sinful desires, right? But then faith is on the other side of that, and believing in something such as Jesus came and died for my sins and rose again, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, well, no one would do that, you know. But if you believe that, then he did, and so that's the faith. And just because that's hard to understand or get, I don't think it's a bad thing that it's hard to get.
Yeah. So I wish I was that kind of person who could say, for one reason or another, this is what I believe or this is what I don't believe. But, and I have a lot of those things that I am that way with, but faith is not one of them. I don't know, or at least faith in a theist mindset. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things where I can honestly put my hands up in here and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a lot of ideas. But I'm perfectly comfortable with saying I don't know, and I think that's a position that more people need to be comfortable with.
Right.
Because I know there are millions of people out there who say that, I'm a Christian, but in their heart of hearts, they don't know.
Yeah.
And I can't
absolutely.
Do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it leads me to kind of what we were about to talk about.
Well, how was your Easter?
The Easter holiday. Yeah. But this ties into that, too. So, Easter and Christmas.
420 Sunday.
Easter and Christmas have been maybe the past 2 or 3 years the only time that I'll darken the door of a church. But this Easter I went and I had an amazing time
at church.
At church.
Let me
preface this. Okay. First off,
you're still high, Matt.
No, I'm not.
That's with the, from
no,
420.
No. I had an amazing Sunday, and that was part of it. However, the first part, went over to my sister's, or to my mom's, about 9 o'clock. Uh-huh. Whole family was over there.
Yeah, Easter.
My mom made Easter brunch. Church service wasn't until 11:30.
Nice.
We caught the late one. So, we were all hanging out at the house till like 11 o'clock for like a couple hours.
Right.
Brunch, you know.
Family.
Real nice food. Holiday. Family. Had hid eggs out in the yard for my niece.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
And she and I played in the yard for a little while, for like half an hour. But she picked up the stick and started swinging it. So I picked up a stick and we started doing sword fights, right?
Nice.
My little brother Joseph comes around and he's 15 and he says, "I'm going to get you, Maggie." And she runs behind me and she says, no, the monster, whatever, you know? And so I'm down, I'm like, "Are we going to get the monster?" And she's like, "Yeah, you're the hero." And I was like,
So that was the...
I was like, you know, I grew 3 feet right then. I'm like, I'm the hero. I've been waiting for a woman to tell me this for years.
Right, and here it took
She just happens to be 3 years old and related to me.
Right.
Oh. Anyway, no, it was an awesome moment. So we played
Swords and Heroes, right?
Hero versus Monster Save the Princess.
Right, yep, a good game.
For about half an hour.
Yep.
Yeah, hung out with the family.
And then went to church.
Laughing, talking with my sisters. You know, no one causing any drama or anything, which was awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, went to church, got there. And this was the part I was dreading because I didn't want to have to sit through a boring service with stuff I've heard before. And it was the late service, the contemporary worship service.
Right.
Which is always the loud rock band. Mm-hmm. And then multimedia video and then a dumbed down sermon. I'm sorry, but Grace Community Chapel, you need to step up your game. Anyway, ended up, I got 10 feet in the door in church, and Justin McEachran accosts me.
Nice.
And we spent...
Who is an old friend of yours.
Yeah. And
semi-friend acquaintance of mine.
Well, you guys graduated together, walked down...
That's true. He walked down right next to me when we graduated.
With Christian Home Educators Fellowship graduation.
Oh, did you have to say that?
The same... Hey, I graduated with them too, so...
We're brothers in the homeschool.
To those
American
who don't
dream.
Know, yeah, it's St. Charles in this area, big in homeschooling, and so every year they have all the homeschool families come together and throw this big graduation ceremony, quote unquote. At
which for some of us, I will remind you, that was the only time we were allowed to see members of the opposite sex.
That's true. Anyway,
I'm going to stop right there.
Okay, so
to protect the very guilty.
So. I got 10 feet in the door at church, and Justin McEachran stops me. And Justin's probably, I don't know, he's maybe 23, 24 right now. So he's younger than me.
Right.
But sharp mind.
Right.
Good guy.
Right.
And a great conversation. Every time I see him, great conversation. So we ended up kind of slowly over the course of 15 minutes before church service started, kind of wandering our way to the door as we were talking.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the door right there, almost standing right next to the ushers.
Mm-hmm. To go in.
To go in.
Yeah.
And we just kept talking. And the doors closed. The ushers closed the doors. And we kept talking. And then 10 minutes later, he just doesn't say anything, just sits down on one of the benches right there. And I sit back.
Right outside the church service.
And we,
unreal.
We spent 15 minutes before church service started.
Yeah, and then
talking all the way through church service.
Right.
An hour.
Yeah.
And then another 15 minutes before my mom walked by. She's like, hey, are you going to come? Are you going to catch a ride with us back to the house? Or what's going on? Yeah, so that was one of the high points of my Sunday, was being able to sit down and just talk to him for an hour and a half, talk about writing, because he's a writer, talk about he moved to LA for a little while,
he's
trying to make it as a writer and stuff like that, works at a library now, but we also had these existential conversations about my pendulum of theism and agnosticism,
right,
and how he's the same way.
Yeah.
And we started talking about, you know, old earth creationism and New Earth creations. Anyway, it was a great conversation. Then went back to the house, hung out with my sisters and my brothers for a little while. Yeah. And
good
then went home, took a nap.
So this Easter really had all of the things that you treasure in life.
Yeah.
An old friend, a nap.
Skipping church.
A good meal. And the three-year-olds in your family.
Yeah. And then around 10 o'clock or so, my buddy Chris texts me. He's like, hey, what's going on? Not much. What are you up to? About to go over to my brother's house and hang out for a little while. You want to come over? Sure. So in the morning, I celebrated Easter. And at night, I celebrated 420. And it was a good day. It was a very good day.
Nice.
What'd you do for Easter?
I took my kid to church. First time he's been to church. Which was really cool. He wore a tie and a vest. He looked better than his dad.
Yeah.
By far. It was really cool.
Not even a month old, already dressed into the nines.
Yeah, exactly. Just and make no mistake, there were a lot of ladies that were crowded around to see him.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. He's got that Todd passion flowing through his veins.
Well, I mean, I can hardly contain it right now in the small room that we're in.
Right. Kid was dressed in the nines, looking great. He just looked excellent. It was really cool. I said to a friend of mine, I said, come here. I want to introduce you to someone. And he knew I was talking about my son. And I said, I want to introduce you to someone that literally less than 100 people have ever met. And he was like, that's pretty cool, actually. Mm-hmm. I was like, just because saying it like that, it's so crazy. Like, he's a kid. He's a baby. But anyways, yeah, that was pretty much the highlight of it. And then we went to someone's house after church, and we had pancakes, like an Easter brunch kind of thing. Okay. Pancakes, yeah. Eggs. I'm not a huge pancake person.
I am.
If people, I know you are.
I love them.
If we go to Gingham's, Denny's, IHOP, your usual pancake joints, I don't normally get pancakes.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I've gotten pancakes in that venue. But here, it was the main course, and she had pancakes with chocolate chips in them. So I was like, well, sure, I'll have some pancakes, and they were freaking awesome. They were really, really good.
Pancakes are delicious. It's almost impossible to mess up pancakes. No matter, okay, like you can make a good pancake and a bad pancake, but what you do to it after the pancake's been made, it's almost possible to mess it up.
Yeah.
Chocolate, whipped cream, peanut butter. Of course you know my favorite topping on pancakes.
Peanut butter?
No.
Peanuts?
Well, I've done it at Denny's and Gingham's before. Ice cream.
You have done that.
Yeah. You take a pile of pancakes and a big old scoop of vanilla ice cream right on top, just a little bit of syrup, and oh my gosh, hot pancakes and ice cream. That's the reason why God gave us taste buds. Allegedly God gave us taste buds.
Among the other things he's being tried for, one of them allegedly is having given us taste
making
buds.
Making me fat.
Yeah. No, anyways, so yeah, we had a nice little Easter brunch with friends. It was just close, good friends. Her family was out of town. My family wasn't really doing anything. So we pretty much had a nice little brunch with friends. It was a good time.
Cool.
Yeah, my kid got to meet a lot of people at church for the first time, first time. So. Yeah. Anyways.
Right on.
Moving on from that, though.
Okay.
This happened to me a couple of weeks ago. And maybe we can joke about it. Maybe I can just tell a story, whatever you want to do. But me and Meredith pulled up to Quick Trip here in St. Charles. Pulled up. Guy came out. Or a guy walked in, actually. And he had a suit, like the full suit, tie, pants, all, you know, the whole bit. Looked like he just walked out of a church. And it was a Sunday. And he was walking into Quick Trip with a backpack on and holding a pair of tennis shoes. And me and my wife just kind of watched him. He walked right in front of our car. We pulled up, to the store, walked right past the car. And my wife so accurately said, she goes, just hit the table. She goes, there goes a Baptist. I said, and I just replied with this. I said, if God had a nickel for every time a Baptist carried a backpack somewhere, with clothes in it to change into, because of course you can do other things on a Sunday, not in a suit.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be in church, you have to be in a suit.
Sure.
If God had a nickel for every time that a Baptist carried a backpack somewhere with the change of clothes in it, he wouldn't have money problems. He would be able to feed all the people he wanted and the poor and the widows and everything. God wouldn't have money problems if he had a nickel for every time that happened.
My question is,
growing up, that was... that's what we did. Every Sunday, we'd carry backpacks to church with like shorts in them. So we could, whatever we wanted to do, play baseball or go to Quick Trip or whatever we wanted to do.
After church?
Yeah, we'd change into them and then change back into the suit and the tie for
Sunday
service.
Night?
Yep.
Because presumably, you're not going home for church or what?
A lot of times we didn't. No.
Okay.
We'd just stay there. Right. Yeah. Stay there. Sometimes we'd eat there. Sometimes we'd go somewhere to eat, whatever it was.
Yeah. You see, growing up for me, that was never a problem because we always lived... First off, from the time
but
I was
you
like,
didn't go to the church that did the suits and ties, really.
Yeah, well. We did. From the time I was 7 to the time I was 14, we went to Oak Ridge Baptist.
So an independent Baptist church?
No, it was Southern Baptist.
Oh.
But yeah.
So the Baptists that are going to hell.
Yeah, a step down from Indies.
Right.
Your old Indie Baps, as they're known in the streets. Indie Baps. we always lived close enough. The house was always super close, and so we always would go home and change and then do whatever.
Same thing though, right? Because you would have the suit on, or the whatever, the jacket and tie, and go home and change.
Like I wouldn't have a suit on, but I always have a shirt I didn't want to wear.
Yeah,
and have to have it tucked in.
I know. This past Sunday, the church I go to now, I wore a jacket, and then a button down shirt and jeans.
Yeah,
I was comfortable for the whole day.
See, that's how church should do it.
Yep.
But like, I was a fat kid growing up, so like.
And a fat kid now.
Well, like when I'm like 9 years old going to church and I have to tuck in, like I had already, I'm, I'm 8 years old, 9 years old. Are you discovered Tommy Bahama shirts and how they hung down to hide the belly,
right.
and everything else. So,
you just look like one straight kind of block of a mass rather than
tucking in,
distinguishable bulges.
Tucking in for me meant I looked even more rotund. So I never like tucking in my shirt. I still don't.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Anyways,
I never had to have to change clothes after church kind of problem.
Yeah.
So,
well, there's something to do.
Independent Baptist world problems.
Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mentioned Earth Day a minute ago.
Yeah.
We'll swing into this story. And then I've got a couple other stories, but I really want to hit that story that you got to.
Yeah.
Well, actually, really quick. So, last week, we talked about a lot of weird things, a lot of esoteric things. The title of the episode was Things That Could Probably Happen.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we didn't talk about, I don't think. Did we talk about the Loch Ness Monster?
No.
What do you think about the Loch Ness Monster?
It's a hoax.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it exists.
How?
I totally think it exists.
How?
Because they're like, of all the corners of the ocean, there is certainly parts that we can't see or get to.
And how has it continued to exist for presumably millions of years? I mean, those locks have been landlocked. Those lakes in Scotland have been landlocked for, you know, millions of years. How did that Loch Ness Monster get trapped in that lake?
Well, it's too deep. He just hid down there.
Yeah, it is super deep.
Oh, you're wondering how it got there in the first place?
How it got there in the first place and how
global flood.
At this point, either it's one really, really old Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
Or there can be only, it's like Highlander, there can be only one, and every time one generation reproduces, they kill their parents. Like, and you know,
well, it doesn't really make much sense in the animal kingdom. But I do. You don't think there could be one?
No,
just one that we've seen
off
and on.
The famous fuzzy photo of this neck coming out of the water.
Yeah.
That the guy who took that photo said it was a hoax. A couple years before he died, he admitted, "Yeah, I put it on a little boat with an engine on it, a little model."
Like a homemade
speedboat,
right? Okay.
You know?
Right.
And he said, I attached his head to it, and I took a fuzzy photograph and said, hey, the Loch Ness Monster exists. I put that in the category of crop circles. Like, crop circles definitely started when a couple drunk Irish guys decided to take some ladders and some rope. And yeah, they're super complex now.
Yeah.
Geometrically.
And you don't think the ones now... You don't think maybe the aliens saw our attempts at crop circles and said, we can do that better, and now they're making their own?
Maybe. Or maybe it's just now, you know, a bunch of university students who are really good at math and geometry and can figure out how to lay these patterns out. You know, I don't know.
It's a good point. Anyways, that was the last thing I wanted to talk about from last week. Was the possibility of
Loch Ness Monster. No, that's a zero for me.
Anyways, Earth Day.
Uh-huh.
I pulled up this article. You're going to hate this article. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't assume. But this article is, it's from the Daily Mail, dailymail.co.uk. And the title is, Obama will burn more than 35,000 gallons of fuel on Earth Day, emitting 375 tons of carbon dioxide.
What do you mean Obama?
Here's the breakdown. President took Marine One chopper to Andrews Air Force Base and will fly to Washington State and Tokyo, Japan on Tuesday. Earth Day is about taking action, the White House declared shortly after takeoff. Air Force One consumes 5 gallons of jet fuel for every mile it flies. The U.S. Energy Information Administration estimates that burning the fuel emits 21.1 pounds of CO2 per gallon. Total presidential fuel consumption for Earth Day, not including automobile motorcades, is an estimated 35,609 gallons.
Yeah. He also wants to get rid of coal refineries, which, other than industrial farming, is the biggest output, you know, puts more CO2 into the atmosphere than... you know, nuclear energy by a factor of 5 to 1. And he also wants to get rid of those, but Republicans won't let him. So, I mean,
Other than the safety, though, isn't nuclear energy, other than the safety and obviously, like, what happened to Fukushima and things like that?
Isolated instances.
How many
meltdowns have we had in the history of nuclear energy?
One and a possible,
one.
Right?
Like, one and Fukushima, which probably is a meltdown, but people are just covering it up. So, two.
Right.
Of the thousands of nuclear power plants around the
world. Other than those incidents, isn't nuclear energy basically the cleanest and cheapest form of energy right now, essentially?
That is feasible to use on a power grid?
On a mass scale, yeah.
I mean, solar and wind energy is much, much cleaner. obviously.
Yeah, but it's right now it's still a little bit more expensive.
Well, it doesn't have an infrastructure. That's the thing. Like they're localized communities of people who are getting their power from solar and wind.
Right.
And they're mostly in very liberal parts of the country, right? Yeah. California, mm-hmm. a lot of them, stuff like that. So actually most of them in California. But there's just not the infrastructure there. Right. You know, they're not connecting to the power grid. And 20 years ago, if we'd started building wind and solar infrastructures, today we would be able to see a significant part of our energy consumption needs being met by those things. So we wouldn't be as dependent on coal or nuclear energy. I mean, the whole point of developing new energy technologies is to slowly phase out the old ones as the new ones become
cheaper and easier to use. And more mass produced and more relevant. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
And so the fact that we're still sticking with coal after 200 years and how much lead, how much arsenic, how much CO2 it puts into the atmosphere and what it does, not just to the environment, but to us.
Yeah.
I mean, you know?
Yeah.
It's...
No, I agree. It's a dirty form of energy.
It's the dirtiest form of energy.
But also, you know, moving on, when you start looking at new forms of energy or new forms of anything, new forms of technology, new forms of communication, whatever it is, there's kind of an old ruling class. Technology is a little bit different now because the internet and people can kind of invent whatever they want. But you kind of have an old ruling class. And by ruling class, I mean the moneymakers off of a particular type of technology. And so that's why the Tesla is hated on so much, because do you think GM likes the Tesla?
No.
Like, and not at all.
It's very apparent from that every car maker in America is trying to outlaw
the
direct-to-consumer sales.
The roads, right.
Right. I mean, exactly. That's been in the news the past month. They're trying to outlaw direct-to-consumer sales.
Which is insane because a quote-unquote free market economy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's people who are supposedly for this free market economy who are pushing to keep Tesla banned because Tesla doesn't want to set up middlemen. Right. They want to sell directly to consumer because right now it's not economically feasible for them to do that.
Yeah.
They don't sell enough cars to have somebody,
a Tesla dealership.
Exactly.
Right.
You can't support that kind of business.
Right.
So the only way they can sell their cars now is to do direct to consumers. Mm-hmm. So they're forced to foreign markets. I mean, China's buying Tesla.
Is that how that works? You just sign for
in America.
Right. Yeah, it's weird, but anyway, that's the problem with any new type of technology is you have the old moneymakers on the system that everyone uses.
And it's very evident now that these old moneymakers control the game.
Like, how do you think the VHS clowns feel now? Yeah, well, Netflix, bitches.
Well, VHS was beaten by DVDs, and that was...
Speaking of Netflix...
Pornography gave us DVDs.
Yeah, I know. But speaking of Netflix, I have a story about them, too. They're bringing up their prices.
Yeah?
Yeah. Apparently, I pulled this from Mashable, which, again, arguably is like a... It's kind of a... It's a slicker BuzzFeed. It's like a blog site that covers social news and things like that. But anyways, this is based off of
a more discerning BuzzFeed, but still a BuzzFeed.
Kind of, yeah. And this is based off of... I'll just read the article here. Netflix is planning to raise the price of its popular streaming service by as much as $2 a month, according to statements in its first quarter earnings filings. Mm-hmm. Current subscribers would stay at the $7.99 price for... And I pulled up the actual report that this was based off of, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what it said. It was a little bit vague, but it just said, quote, a generous time period. Whatever that means, the company wrote in a statement to investors. Quote, our current view is to do a $1 or $2 increase, depending on the country, later this quarter for new members only. Mm-hmm. The news came as Netflix announced that it added 4 million new members in the first quarter of 2014 as the company beat revenue and profit expectations. The company now counts 48.4 million paid subscribers. Netflix said that it is focusing on international markets as U.S. growth slows.
Yeah.
We intend to continue our international expansion over the coming year, so our near-term profits will be quite modest as we invest in this large global opportunity.
I think it's the perfect time
to raise it.
Yeah, they're in the news a lot trying to fight the net neutrality clause because they don't want people like Comcast.
Apparently the Netherlands
and Time Warner
is the country in the world where you can get the fastest Netflix.
Yeah.
Because the internet is more open there than the United States. But like, don't think for one second here in the United States that basically every single internet provider you use is using some kind of technology to divide up your bandwidth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not under, like, if you think that's not happening, you're an idiot.
And to give preferential treatment to certain websites.
Services, yep, absolutely.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. Which is why Google Fiber. We need Google Fiber.
Yeah, we do. But I think it's a perfect time for Netflix to do this. They've never been more popular, right? You said how many subscribers? 48 million?
Yeah, 48.4, I think.
Okay, so almost 50 million subscribers. I'm sure by the end of this year, they'll probably be to 50 or 60.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
Or even second quarter.
Especially as people, because you know House of Cards, well, things like House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, mm-hmm. Derek, things like that, people are going to, I'm going to show that to my friends who aren't subscribers. At my house, and they're going to be like, oh, that's really cool, and maybe then subscribe.
Yeah, and for somebody who's going to pay $8 a month, you're telling me they're not going to pay 10 for a service like that, that they've, let's say they had Netflix for 3 or 4 years,
yeah,
and they've been paying 8 all along.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's $2 a month, you know, it's a $25 more a year, but it's
for
not
the
that
service
much.
Itself, yeah.
It's not that much more, and for someone who loves the service and uses the service on a regular basis, and I think most Netflix users,
mm-hmm.
like, that's their go-to. If they have that bored time where they're like, you know what, I don't know what to do. Because it's something you can watch on your TV and then still flip through your smartphone. You can multitask. You can always go back to it later. It's always going to be there, right?
Yeah.
For most things on Netflix. So it's...
And then it's automatically says we are in the season, in the movie, whatever it is. Like, it's... Yeah.
And let's say, how many times a week do you put on the Netflix? Daily?
Oh, probably at least daily.
Okay,
yeah.
So...
Unless for some reason I work all day
so
or whatever.
Of almost 50 million subscribers... They're probably, those subscribers are probably, I'm going to say 40 million of those are watching that Netflix every day, which means that Netflix has twice the views of any network out there.
Television show.
Yeah, CBS, yeah. NBC, ABC.
Yeah.
Netflix gets more views than any of those channels. Maybe not television as a whole, but individual television channels, they're bigger than all of them. So, I think that... You know,
$2 is perfect.
If I subscribe to Netflix, and I don't, but if I did, I wouldn't mind paying an extra $10 a month.
Right.
If anything, just to help Netflix fight big companies like Comcast and Time Warner, who are trying to merge right now so that they can...
Control more of the market.
If Comcast and Time Warner merge, they will control 80% of the internet in the United States.
Oh my God, that's unreal.
Which then means there's one company you go to...
For your internet. Yeah, and then they can charge whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
They can throttle it however they want. They can do preferential treatment to their services, slow down other services, things
companies
like that.
Companies that they own, for instance, they own NBC,
mm-hmm.
right? So they can make NBC's websites go faster or download
videos.
Exactly. Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's pretty, the internet's just like anything else, just a bunch of people trying to make money, and the people that are really making money, like the really big paychecks, are doing everything they can to make sure that those checks are still coming in.
I think the past 10 years, past 15 years, people have been trying to find a way to monetize the internet.
Mm-hmm.
What we see now are...
Well, the infrastructure is the monetizer.
Okay, yeah. So, what we see now is large companies trying to monopolize the internet.
Yeah.
And that's what these...
In terms of the infrastructure,
that's what the fight's
services.
About. SOPA and PIPA are all about.
Yeah,
that is about keeping these companies from monopolizing the internet. And just for anybody out there listening, any regulation out there, my advice to you: vote against it. Any internet regulation at all, no matter how you think it's packaged, if it's packaged like the anti-pornography thing in Britain,
I thought that SOPA thing was just to keep me from downloading the new Drake album and stealing from him.
No,
that's not
what
it's about.
It's not about that. It's about controlling not only the flow of information on the internet, but the speed of that information and who is able to access that information.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I hate Drake, by the way.
Me too. I don't hate him because I don't want to spend the time to either love or hate him. I don't think he's worth my
time.
Any of my passions.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's peanut butter and chubby girls out there. They deserve my passions. Not Drake.
Yeah, true priorities. No,
exactly.
I do agree with you, and that's that was the whole thing when SOPA did kind of get, even when some of the other companies, even huge companies, big money makers, right, like Google, mm-hmm. Yahoo, things like that, like when they got on board and peeled back what SOPA was really about, and kind of took it upon themselves to educate the public about what that type of thing was about,
mm-hmm.
like it's not about piracy or something like that, because Google does everything they can about piracy anyways.
Yeah.
All those companies are complying in the countries that they operate in as best according to the law that they can, right?
Sure.
Like that's what they're all doing. Mm-hmm. But it's not really about that.
No.
So.
No, it's not. It's not at
all. That was a story I had about Netflix. I've got a couple other smaller stories, but let's get into this story that you've got. I've got the website pulled up here, the article pulled up.
Yeah, well, we have the rage going, and I think we might take turns reading back and forth. But
from Global Research, Center for Research on Globalization.
Yeah, globalresearch.ca. What I want to do is, before we dive into the article, which is super meaty,
fairly lengthy.
It's a nice article with a lot of good information on it. I want to talk about the Bank of International Settlements, which last week's show we were talking a little bit about the IMF and the Federal Reserve and stuff like that. And
In terms of control, I
mistakenly called them the International Bank of Settlers. No, the Bank of International Settlements.
Okay.
Established in May 17th, 1930, out of Basel, Switzerland, where it's still centered. Started with a 60-bank membership.
Mm-hmm.
60, not banking banks, not banks that you and I can go to,
mm-hmm.
but
the big lenders, the big spenders, that kind of thing.
World banks.
Right.
Country banks.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve, the IMF, any national reserve state bank.
Right.
And
to be clear, these are the types of banks that control currencies.
Yes.
And interest rates.
Yeah. No, and it's all currency controllers, and that's what we'll talk about in a minute. Anyway, it was established in 1930.
Mm-hmm.
In an effort to, in post-World War II Europe, to stabilize economies,
mm-hmm.
but more than that, to control economies and to control the flow of money in and out of Europe and across the world. We just had a global war. Now we have a global economy struggling to come out of that. And we see right after this establishment of this bank comes the Great Depression, which the establishment of this bank was, and other Federal Reserves, world banks, state-run banks, was supposed to keep that stuff from happening, and it happened right off the bat. Anyway, it was founded by Germans, mostly. A couple of guys who went on to become heads of the Gestapo, a couple of guys who were tried for crimes against humanity at Auschwitz, at Nuremberg.
Right.
About half a dozen Nazis, men who went on to become Nazis,
at the very least Nazi sympathizers.
A couple French heads of state, a couple Belgian heads of state, the United States,
right.
And Great Britain were kind of the major players in this. 60s Bank is the initial membership, and they have now, you can look at a map, actually, in this article, there's a link to one. If you can find it, if you look at the map of banks where the International Bank of International Settlements, what they do is they are the Federal Reserve for the Federal Reserves of the world.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones who hand down marching orders. And this organization controls.
This is the link you were talking about. I just clicked on this link from here about these six media corporations that run the whole world. Did you click on that link?
No, I didn't.
I think it was in the last paragraph. Oh my god!
But if you look at this map, it's all of Europe,
right?
All of European banking except for a small former Soviet countries, Egypt, and South Africa, China.
So all of Africa,
Russia, the Pacific Rim. South Pacific,
right.
Australia, New Zealand, United States, Canada, Mexico.
So basically
Central
every
America,
big country.
And most of South America. So just a couple countries in South America and all of Africa except for Egypt and South Africa,
mm-hmm.
and a couple Asian countries are in on this. They're all a part of it.
Right.
Meaning our banking system is
influenced.
Takes marching orders from the International Bank of Settlements or the Bank of International Settlements. Anyway, only non-governmental agencies can hold membership in this bank, so you and I can't go there,
mm-hmm.
right? Non-governmental agencies, okay? So no agency that's run by a government,
mm-hmm.
no currency agency that's run and controlled by a government can become a part of the International Bank of Settlements.
And the Federal Reserve is a part.
Which means that every country who's a part of the Bank of International Settlements, that reserve bank,
mm-hmm.
doesn't answer to that country's government, which means every country on that map we were just talking about
doesn't have control of their money.
Those governments don't control the money,
right?
And their currencies. This bank does.
Mm-hmm.
It has only non-governmental agencies can hold a membership. and it has immunity in all contracting countries since its inception.
What do you mean?
Since its inception, it has complete immunity from any country that is involved with this bank. So if the Federal Reserve is involved with this bank, say, we as a people, as a government, can't go after the Bank of International Settlements because the Federal Reserve has already has a contract with them saying that they're not going to be held accountable for anything. And that's basically what this says. Their charter says that countries that are subject to the International Bank of Settlements can't hold them accountable for what they do. It's in its charter. It's a law they put down from the get-go, saying we're not going to be responsible to anybody. This is from their website. BIS, Bank of International Settlements, conducts or coordinates regulations in the fields of financial services to promote international stability. Coordinates regulations in the field of financial services. What does that sound like to you?
It sounds a lot like...
coordinates regulations.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like we're going to change things for the better, and the better is something defined by us. To me,
exactly.
What I
did in my mind was just take out conducts or coordinates, and I put controls.
Yeah.
BIS controls regulations in the field of financial services to promote international stability.
Right.
That's from their actual website. That's from the header on their website.
Well, here's a question. Who, in terms of international stability, that was the term, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whose definition of international stability?
Exactly.
Because if you ask, even certain people in the United States, perhaps a lot of them, we don't have international stability, right? I think a lot of Americans are upset with not only the way their government runs, but the way things are being run in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if you pull your average Egyptian or your average Saudi citizen or your average Palestinian or your average Israeli or whoever and ask them if we have in some concept of international stability, I don't think that they would agree with that. So
now, like
whose definition? That's the question.
Exactly. Now, like any famous underdog story, we have a whistleblower.
Sure.
Someone who's...
And so that's where all this information comes from in this article.
Yes.
Right.
Now, enter Karen Hughes.
Right.
Whistleblower who worked at the World Bank for 20 years.
Held the position of senior counsel.
Exactly. I think it from 1986 to 2007.
Yeah, that's what it says here, 86 to 2007. Studied law at Yale Law School and Economics at the University of Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
She worked in the U.S. Export-Import Bank of the United States from 80 to 85 and in the legal department of the World Bank from 86 to 2007. She established the non-governmental organization.
A really long name.
Yeah, of the International Law Section of the American Bar Association and the Committee on Multilateralism and the Accountability of International Organizations of the American Branch of the International Law Association.
You had to take two breaths during that, reading that, all that.
Yeah. Today, Hughes is trying very hard to expose the corrupt financial system, and this is just a background on her, it looks like.
But basically, in 2007, what happened was she realized what was going on, and she started blowing
whistles. In terms of all this,
coordinating. Exactly. Well, starting in 2005, because there's a bigger picture here we'll get to in a minute. But in 2005, she started going to her superiors saying, hey, what's up? Going public with this information. She was promptly fired. Slandered.
What? Really? The new keeper there?
She was promptly fired.
Right.
Slandered.
Yeah.
And no one started paying attention to her.
Right.
Until the men started raising Cain, Julian Assange, Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
But, I mean, leave it to men to finally do something that women have been talking about doing for years.
And men that are into men. That was a Glenn Greenwald joke, by the way.
A former insider at the World Bank, ex-senior counsel Karen Hughes, says the global financial system is dominated by a small group of corrupt, power-hungry figures centered around the privately owned U.S. Federal Reserve.
Well, I'll read that last part again. Centered around the privately owned U.S. Federal Reserve.
Yes.
Yeah.
The network has seized control of the media to cover up its crimes, too, she explained. In an interview with The New American, Hughes said that when she tried to blow the whistle on multiple problems at the World Bank, she was fired for her efforts.
Now, and problems, I think that's what's key here about this Karen Hughes lady, because having held this job and these different jobs and having studied at Yale Law School, this isn't some just, she's not just wearing a tinfoil hat and finding a governmental Satan under every rock, as it were. She's very educated.
Mm-hmm.
She's held these different jobs. She's very knowledgeable. And obviously was doing these jobs well, right? She wouldn't have got promoted. She wouldn't have been able to move on to
for over
these
20
jobs.
Years working for 20, the World Bank.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. She was in the law department of the World Bank. So what does it say to you? She was the one trying to find out how to subvert laws.
Right.
And get around international regulations.
But I just think it's interesting that it says that, you know, when she tried to blow the whistle on multiple problems at the World Bank. So in theory, to me, it just sounds like an employee of anywhere saying, hey, things aren't really working well. Can we maybe fix these things?
Yeah.
Like, not really, I'm trying to take down the system and stick it to the man, obviously. She wound up losing her job. You know, it sounds really a lot more like you could even paint that picture of Snowden. Like, I mean, what did he do? Well, he left and then from a foreign country, you know, with a laptop full of secrets, he said, here's what's up, which mm-hmm. is even a little bit mm-hmm. more shady than someone who's there going to the leadership and saying, I see some problems here, some things we might want to think about and fix and consider. It, which is at least what it sounds like the way that she was coming across.
Like, she just tried to solve the problems internally first.
Right, exactly. Which, if you're a good employee, you should be doing proactively, you know, on a daily basis. Yeah. But,
so they cite another article here, but the quote from Hughes says, a network of global corporate control, mostly financial institutions and especially central banks, exert a massive amount of influence over the international economy from behind the scenes. Quote, what is really going on is that the world resources are being dominated by this group, that the power-hungry, the corrupt power grabbers have managed to dominate the media as well. They're being allowed to do it. Now, another study that the author mentions, it was conducted by a team of researchers at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland. They studied the relationships between 37 million companies and investors worldwide, and what they discovered is that there is a super entity of just 147 very tightly knit mega corporations that control 40% of the world's global economy.
Mm-hmm.
What the team further untangled the web...
Let me make a quick note about the 40%, right? Because 40%, we're used to thinking in terms of, if I say to you, Matt, you own 40% of this podcast and I own the other 60%. Well, who owns the bigger share?
You do.
I do, right.
Yeah.
But if you look at the global economy and in terms of the money that's flowing around, 40% of that is the largest single entity.
Yeah.
Right. It's mm-hmm. it's you have to look at it a little bit differently than your simple dicing of a pie, right?
Yeah.
And your simple school math of 100% is the whole amount.
Yeah.
So 40% is smaller than the rest. But no one else controls as much as the 40%. So it is the biggest controlling interest in the global economy.
Yeah.
But I just want to make
what we're talking about right now about the Bank of International Settlements is that it's controlled by just a couple countries.
Yeah.
And it controls 99% of the world's economies, except for a couple small countries that have small economies that aren't in on this thing.
And currencies that don't exist.
Yeah. they control 99% of the currencies and 99% of the economies around the world. To go on. Super entities of 47 tightly knit companies. All of their ownership was held by other members of the super entity, meaning that they all controlled the entire companies. They control 40% of the total wealth in the network. It means the network of the world's economies, they control 40%.
Right.
In effect, less than 1% of the companies were able to control 40% of the entire network. The top 20 in companies included Barclays, JP Morgan, and Goldman Sachs. Now, what do we know about Goldman Sachs since 2008?
Corruption.
They're all scumbags.
Yeah.
They're all scumbags who are trying to steal your money.
Right.
They're legalized Bernie Madoffs. Anyway, but the global elite doesn't just control these mega corporations. According to Hughes, they also dominate the unelected, unaccountable organizations that control the finances of virtually every nation in the face of the world. The World Bank, the IMF, and central banks such as the Federal Reserve. And that's what this whole point is you have a couple hundred, 150, 147 companies who are controlling the largest bank in the world,
mm-hmm.
this Bank of International Settlements. And therefore, these companies control every economy in the world.
Yeah.
This, to me, this article, what this lady has bravely stated and said, put her career on the line, put her life on the line, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And her, you know, her reputation, to let us know what we've been suspecting for years and years, and what we've come to know in the past couple is that corporations run this world. And not just corporations, some ghost entity. We're talking about corporations we can name. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Barclays, McDonald's, Nike. Like, these corporations decide our laws. They decide the air we breathe. They decide what's in our oceans. Do you read that article I sent you about Trash Island?
I did, actually. I was going to mention that earlier with the Loch Ness Monster about just as a tag along from last. Because that was the one thing that when you brought up, I was like, what? I've never heard of that.
Aliens, you're perfectly acceptable of, but...
well, because people talk about aliens Trash all the time, Island, you're but like Trash BS. Island is a little bit suspect in nature. But no, yeah, there are trash islands, people. Big masses of trash that have globbed together in the world's oceans, and those exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's
that's pretty radical.
Yeah, and animals are eating this stuff, and then we're eating those animals, and we're drinking that water. Like, it's,
well, at this point, isn't pretty much everybody on the earth eating some kind of trash? Like.
Yeah, we're all being slowly poisoned.
Like isn't like 15 to 18% of what we eat trash?
Yeah, but just because your boat springs a leak doesn't mean you stop paddling out water. You know,
depends on how big the leak.
You know what
is.
I mean? Yeah, but you know,
it's a big enough leak. Doesn't man. Mean you might jump, as well enjoy the scenery while you go down.
Doesn't mean you don't start trying to swim.
Start singing "Nearer, My God, to Thee" and play it on a violin. It'll one day be in a museum in Branson, Missouri.
Just because your boat springs a leak doesn't mean you acquiesce
like
to
three Titanic
the
references.
Idea of drowning, you know?
It depends.
Anyway.
Yeah. The point you're trying to make finalized or brought to the ground level would be what? Or just that the Federal Reserve.
Number one, read this article.
Yeah.
Learn more about the World Bank, IMF, or the International Monetary Fund, the Federal Reserve. And this Bank of International Settlements, because it's some sinister stuff.
Well, not only
and
that,
we've been
like
subjecting
I said,
to ourselves for the past 100 years.
This lady is wildly credible. I mean, there's no
besmirching her like you could with Assange or with Snowden.
Yeah,
there's no besmirching this lady.
There's a 20-year career here that these theories, even if you want to call them that, or at least ideas or whatever you know that she said that are built on. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't just a casual observer of how the system works or whatever. Yeah. It was somebody who had a 20-year career at this job in these positions doing these things.
Yeah. Now, she's been blowing the whistle for 7 years now, so why haven't we heard anything? Well, she gets to that in the article, which everybody out there who's listening to this should read. She talks about it, and she states, gives numbers, that these 147 countries or companies and the members of the Bank of International Settlements, which, by the way, you as a government, you can't become a member. Mm-hmm. You have to be either a private investor or a corporation in order to join this bank. These private investors and corporations also own 90% of media.
Yeah.
All media.
Oh, yeah.
Websites, TV, radio, period.
They do not own Tripod Broadcasting.
No, they don't. Tripod Broadcasting is we're Patriots Network.
That's true. Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get tri-corner hats to wear and muskets.
Yeah.
And don't tread on me flags.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
And maybe don't tread on me tattoos. I don't know.
I don't want to put something like that on my body. Because what if one time I do want somebody to tread on me?
And moving on.
No, which is the reason why no one's heard of this before. Because people don't know about. I'm sure people have heard about her.
Right. Because
what she's saying,
the pipeline is
no one realizes what's going on.
And people are writing checks to the pipeline.
Like, yeah, because
that's what I've been saying all along.
Because it's very obvious that 90% of the world's media is being controlled by this small number
of
people.
Yeah, sure.
And they're making sure that only the message they want conveyed is being conveyed.
Yeah.
So you know, it's the Rupert Murdochs of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Anyway, it's a fascinating article.
But the network head here at Tripod Broadcasting is a stand-up guy. Great individual.
Mm-hmm.
Matt and I haven't met him.
No, he's very elusive.
We just kind of talked to a computer He kind of loosely Skypes, but there's like a curtain we can't really see.
It's a big green curtain, and every once in a while some smoke comes out, but you know.
Yeah, but you know, he's been making decisions, writing our checks, so nothing really to question.
Yeah.
Be about, you know, nothing to see here. Move along.
That one time he made you dress up like a scarecrow and me like a lion was a little weird.
Yeah, that was kind of...
Then there was that girl with the red shoes, and she was...
Yeah, I thought she was totally going to have a show. Totally insane. But, yeah. All she did was sing, and then it didn't really turn out well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, after I was done talking to him, I could only see him black and white for a little while.
Yeah.
It was weird.
He's a weird individual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, network heads, what are you going to say?
I don't know. What can you do?
Moving on.
He writes my checks. That's all I know.
Exactly.
That's how I pay for peanut butter.
As long as those go to the bank.
That's how I pay for peanut butter.
Yep. As long as peanut butter's on the shelf, there's nothing to worry about.
So please, if honestly, if you've never listened to anything that I've said on this show or that Addison said,
and I can't blame you
for taking it to heart. Exactly. You can't blame me for writing what I say off. It's kind of lunacy half the time. But listen to what we're saying right now and read this article. It'll be up on the website. Read this article. Or research Karen Hude, H-U-D-E.
H-U-D-E, yeah.
Just read more about it. Learn about it because it's fascinating and it's something that people should know about.
And it's a pretty credible source. That, you know, there's nothing really much more to say about that.
Nope.
But
so, moving on. What's next on the docket?
Well, I've got a couple of media stories. You know, because that matters.
Sure.
No, so I just thought you might find this funny. So, yeah, did you hear that Chelsea Clinton's pregnant?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Whatever.
It's a part of some giant liberal conspiracy to get Hillary elected.
To get more Clintons. Oh, I thought it was just more Clintons in the world.
Just to get Hillary elected.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you hear what Jimmy Fallon said during his...
No.
During his monologue Monday night? After invoking Chelsea Clinton's pregnancy announcement, Fallon mocked her mother, the former Secretary of State and potential 2016 presidential contender. I don't know why everyone... She hasn't even said anything about that, right? Like, it's just in everyone's mind that she'll run.
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of given at this point. And I'm sure she will, but she won't beat Elizabeth Warren.
Well, anyways. Well, and here's what he said. I want to say congrats to Chelsea Clinton. Last week she announced that she is expecting her first child. That's great. That's great for her. If it's a girl, we'll get some of Chelsea's old hand-me-downs. And if it's a boy, we'll get some of Hillary's.
Yeah, okay.
Which, she kind of dresses like a man, to be fair.
Well, she wears pantsuit. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but they're not even good pantsuits. I don't think.
But she's an old lady. Like, old people dress
weird. That's
true.
That's true.
Like, that's not...
She probably smells weird, too.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You don't bag on a man for wearing suits all the time, so... Like,
depends on the man.
Okay, a politician.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, why even bring that up to me? Like, there's so many more things you could make fun of Hillary for. And not even for, like, the Bill Clinton stuff, like the Monica Lewinsky stuff. But, yeah, for the fact that in 2008 when she was on the campaign trail, her accent changed everywhere she went. She changed.
Really? That's funny.
Oh, no, yeah.
So there's, like, compilation videos obvious. On YouTube? Of the whole trail.
When she went to Arkansas, she talked with a little twang. When she went to California, it was very different. When New York, she dropped like a Bronx accent down.
Really?
Like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
No kidding.
Extremely obvious. She was. It was pandering. Like
pandering to the.
That's the stuff you make fun of Hillary Clinton for.
That's pretty funny though.
And having snuck a snook in her sniz. It's a South Park reference.
There's that quick media blurb, and here's another story. Which is interesting, and I didn't know this was the case. The headline is Beijing shuts down thousands of websites and online pornography purge.
Really?
Yeah, apparently the Chinese government... But we know, and we've talked a little bit about it on here, and if anyone doesn't know, I guess they've been living under a rock, but the internet that you see in China is not the internet... Well, it's not the whole internet, number one. It's
we don't have the whole internet either, I don't think. But.
Yeah, probably not. But it's not the internet you see here, and it's not the internet you see everywhere. Mm-hmm. So,
mostly because it's written in Chinese.
Yeah, it's hard to read.
Yeah.
But it says the Chinese government has shut down thousands of websites and social media sites in a bid to purge the internet of online pornography. The nation's state media services announced the progress of its Cleaning the Web 2014 campaign today, which has resulted in the closure of 110 websites and more than 3,300 accounts containing quote-unquote obscene material since January. Online pornography is illegal in China, and the latest drive to last until November follows repeated attempts to censor sites displaying the material. Now, here's the part that I wanted to talk about, or just ponder on, give this some thought. An unidentified spokeswoman for the official Xinhua state agency said, quote, disseminating pornographic information online severely harms the physical and mental health of minors and seriously corrupts social ethos.
Yeah, it's just one more. It's a ploy to control the internet even more. That's all. Just like the thing in Britain was.
Well, right. But I think that statement is about as accurate as you can get.
Really?
Yes. Minors and even adults, you know, consuming pornography on the global scale and with the intensity maybe that it's available, mm-hmm. And what's available online. Yeah, I don't think I would put it in the same category as any other addiction.
Yeah.
It's certainly not healthy. I think it warps your sex drive. I think it warps your social interaction, mm-hmm. and I think it warps your view on the world around you. In a way that's unhealthy.
Yes, on the first one, I don't know on the last two, but I definitely.
Have you ever watched the Your Brain on Porn series?
No.
No. It's popular over at NoFap.
But Reddit. I know that 10 years ago or 15 or 20 years ago, as opposed to now, it was much harder to become sexually addicted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, you could, you know, phone sex lines or, you know, nudie mags or pornos or whatever, but it didn't have there wasn't the instant gratification of being able to whenever you want.
Exactly.
Like, there were steps you had to go through.
And I don't think that's healthy. And we've talked about that in the context of the internet in general, not just in terms of sex. Like, That's what's wrong with kids, because developmentally, I don't think that our brains were meant to handle everything that we want all the time.
Not so much stimulation. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know,
too much external stimuli, and it's you could say that for anything, from music and movies and TV.
Yeah, or whatever, or reading even,
not reading, because reading is a sacrament.
okay.
Reading is a sacrament that some of us still practice. Anyway, I think it's definitely something that can be detrimental. I don't think we should try and control it.
I don't either. Because, like you said, this is another bid to control the internet. Well, that's exactly what it is. And so just because I happen to be on the moral side of this issue in terms of I don't think it's healthy.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean that I think it should be limited. Because when you start limiting things, there's no limit to what you can limit.
Well, it's a social problem with only one solution, and that is either chemical castration, mm-hmm. or regulation of the bedroom. Like cameras in the bedroom making sure you don't touch yourself or have weird sex. Okay? Like, that's the only solution that you can have to that problem.
Oh, you mean in terms of the actual addiction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, right. I think it's a social problem, but, you know, child abuse is a social problem. Homelessness is a social problem. Illiteracy is a social problem.
Yeah, sure.
And there are a lot of steps you can take to prevent those things.
Right.
But you're never going to get to 0% of being able to prevent them completely.
Yeah.
And just because you're trying to prevent them doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do some good, but I don't think... Like, for instance, there are people starving. I would rather feed one belly than keep 10,000 men from jacking off.
Is that going to be on the side of your bus for the presidential?
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Seriously, I would rather see one child one night go to bed on it, who didn't have it before, go to bed on a full stomach, than keep pornography out of everybody's hands, or keep pornography in only adults' hands.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a battle that we should be worried about fighting right now. At all. There's like what we spent 20 minutes just talking about corruption on a global scale.
Well, I don't think it should be a battle that should be fought, but I do think it's worth it to note the psychological effect that it can have, particularly on developing minds.
Here's the thing. Like, let's look at Japanese culture over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a lot of documented case studies that in the past 10 years, the sex drive of the Japanese male has gone down dramatically. Mm-hmm. Now 40% of Japanese men between the ages of 18 and 30 have absolutely no desire for any sort of sexual contact with anyone. Documented. 40% of Japanese males between the ages of 18 and 30 don't want to have sex. Is it because they all are asexual? No.
Right.
No, you could say 1% of 1% of the population is asexual.
Some, right.
And not even that, I don't think. They've already met... I mean, what can one woman do in the face of the internet?
Right.
How sexy can she be?
Well, I know.
In the face of the avalanche, and Japan is so open to pornography and sexual proclivities.
Right.
I don't want to use the word perversion, but different sexual tastes.
Right.
And in the culture, no one cares if you have a body pillow you're married to, or you can get girls' panties out of vending machines, both of which you can, or tentacle porn, both right. All of that, which is part right. of the Japanese culture now.
Yeah.
The hentai, we have a whole sub genre of porn that's devoted specifically to cartoons, and it developed in Japan.
Yeah.
And is extremely popular. I don't think it's a coincidence that the zero sex drive
is
for anything else other than porn is I think it's due directly to pornography and the right. overstimulation
and that's all I'm saying,
is of that young people before they're ready to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's really all I'm saying. Like I'm not saying there needs to be a campaign. It's certainly not necessarily the steps that the Chinese government is now taking. But on the flip side, yeah, that's not good for you. Like,
no.
That's it, to me, I liken it almost to, like, I mean, there are certain other things in society that we allow and everyone does, but we know they're not healthy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe not everyone does anymore because there's a lot of campaigns and a lot of things like that, but like cigarettes, like, you know what I mean? Like,
cigarettes.
Like, I can still go to my local store within walking distance of suburbia and buy a product that is known to kill me, right?
Yeah.
Because I want it.
Yep.
And I kind of...
What about McDonald's?
Yeah, or, exactly. Yeah. Okay,
fast food?
Or, yep.
Is legal, and that will kill you.
Mm-hmm. Or sodium, or soda, or whatever.
Skydiving
else.
Is legal, and that will kill you sometimes.
Well, only if you don't pull the cord.
If you do it enough,
uh-huh.
eventually you're probably going to die from skydiving.
It's possible, yeah.
Just like if you eat enough McDonald's, you're going to die from it. Or you smoke enough cigarettes, you're going to die from them.
Yep. But anyways, I just said that to say, like, there has to be individual accountability in terms of, and especially, like I noted earlier, like, minors, like, because they can't, obviously they shouldn't be exposed to that. Like, you wouldn't give a cigarette to a 10-year-old, like, because they don't know that it's bad for them.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to reference South Park again.
Sure.
And give the listeners and you, and I'm sure you've heard me say this before, one of the wisest things I've ever heard. And it's from Chef on South Park.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Children, there's a time and a place for everything, and it's called college." 18 years old, you hit the 18-year-old threshold. If you want to drink, drink. You want to smoke, smoke. You want to smoke pot, smoke pot. You want to have sex, have sex. Wait until then. Have some sort of cutoff, some sort of, and I think it is in our culture. I think it's gotten to a point now where it's too loose, where college is too much of a open season on every proclivity
well,
you can want.
When people are getting killed and raped, that's kind of
I think one of the worst things that ever happened to our society
as
is that
anything
spring
in life,
break.
Where raping is where you draw the line.
Yeah. I think that with it, that you know, spring break is one of the worst things to ever come out of our culture.
Right.
The idea that that at 18 years old, or at, you know, you've done a semester and a half at college and suddenly you're entitled, or not even college, you know, spring breakers started junior in high school, that you're entitled to be able to take a trip to a foreign country or to a part of the country where the drinking laws are lax, specifically so that you can have sex, get drunk, use drugs, party, embarrass your parents, and then post videos of that on Facebook for everyone to see what a moron you are.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I had one spring break.
Uh-huh.
And it was in December.
Did you spend it at the library?
No, it was in December. And I went to Canada, to Toronto.
For the
Lord of the Rings convention when I was 19.
Yeah. So I guess we said all this to say that spring break should be mandatory Lord of the Rings conventions.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But that was Nerd Spring Break, and I think I got laid. Yes, I did get laid on that trip. So.
Oh.
It was still good.
What was his name?
It was a sexy hobbit. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, there. I wasn't sure if we were going to go with that original title suggestion that I had, but now there's a new title suggestion, right? That's going to be the title.
Okay.
The Sexy Hobbit.
It was a sexy hobbit.
Was that all I had? World Bank. Yada, yada, yada.
Anyway, I think that.
Oh, one last thing
about
Reddit.
I'm just going to add something, but no. Go ahead.
Thinking about Reddit. Mm-hmm. Censorship, pornography.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This flows right into that, and we'll make this our last story. This is from Mashable, again. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But the headline is Reddit in Turmoil Over Censored Posts. And I don't know if you saw anything about this. I had actually seen this on Reddit before I saw it, and this I just pulled up this article. But one of the most popular sections of the user-driven news site Reddit was downgraded Monday after... after users discovered that moderators were removing stories that included popular terms such as Bitcoin, Tesla, Anonymous, mm-hmm. Obama, Congress, National Security Agency, mm-hmm. and Snowden. When users of the section in question, our technology, tried to submit stories with those words in their headlines, their posts were mysteriously removed without comment. It turned out that the moderators of the section, who were all unpaid volunteers, had simply placed a filter on the section that automatically censored headlines with more than 20 popular words in them.
Unpaid by Reddit. Let's make that clear. They weren't paid by Reddit.
Right. Okay. You think they were?
Paid no.
By some entity?
Oh, absolutely. They were paid by somebody else. Absolutely.
Really?
Why would you not? Why would you do that? I mean, you're...
Well, who would pay him?
You become a moderator on Reddit?
Follow the money.
Tesla. Or not Tesla, but
Tesla.
But GM.
Hey, remove our shit, guys.
GM would pay for them to do that. Imagine this. Imagine you're a lonely internet user, right? And you've gotten to a point on now on the social
what
website.
What is there to imagine?
Okay, you've been in things like our news, right? Those moderators have been there for years. Since the start of Reddit, some
yeah.
of them, okay?
Yeah.
Imagine that somebody comes to you and or sends you an email and says, hey, just put this filter on or remove posts that talk about this, and you're going to find your bank account is $50,000 in the black, right?
Right.
Is $50,000 more than it was, or $100,000, or come on, $1 million to these people is chump change, right? $1 million to GM, that's fucking pissing in the breeze. That's nothing. It's nothing. So
well, that's maybe a little bit of a...
So on the number one website in the United States where people go for news you couldn't get anywhere else, for information you couldn't get anywhere else...
I don't know that it's that, but yes.
Okay. But
one of the most popular sites in the world.
But still.
Right.
All
right.
And I would say one of the most unregulated sites
formats,
in the world.
Yeah.
When it comes to total amount of users.
Yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, we already talked about these companies control 90% of the media. What is it to them to throw a couple million dollars the way of half a dozen moderators?
Yeah.
It's nothing. And
well,
I mean,
anyways.
That's what Reddit has been talking about the past month is that they believe these moderators are getting paid. And I believe it, too.
It turned out that the moderators of the section. Oh, yeah. Simply placed a filter on the section that automatically censored headlines with more than 20 popular words in them, simply because the moderators didn't want to deal with the large number of stories submitted on controversial topics. So you're not buying that then? You don't think
they do have an influx of those things? But here's the thing: Reddit already has a way to deal with too many news stories posting the same thing. It's called an upvote and a downvote.
Yeah.
If guess what? If I see, and sometimes I'll go scroll through our news and I'll see. Four postings posting the same article. I saw it this morning.
Yeah.
Okay. With a certain article. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it had to do with the IMF. I upvoted the first one I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the comments, read some of the comments, made a comment myself, was kept on scrolling down, saw another one, didn't upvote, didn't downvote. Saw another one, didn't upvote, didn't downvote. Because why I already cast my vote to make one of those articles more visible. People don't need to see four of them. They're all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And the one that I posted on already had 400 upvotes. The other ones had like half a dozen. So
yeah.
It's not like something, you know, that's the filter that's already in place to keep you from seeing 10 of the same article.
Yeah. now our technology, followed by
and
some
it's a filter that works too. Let me reiterate that it works. It works.
Yeah. Now our technology, followed by some 5 million Reddit users, will no longer be a default subreddit. That means that starting Monday, new users will not be pointed to it from Reddit's homepage. It's a significant step intended to shame the moderators of the subreddit into cleaning house. Quote, the moderation team lost focus of what they were to do, moderate effectively, Reddit communications director Victoria Taylor told the BBC. We might consider adding them back in the future if they can show us and the community that they can overcome these issues.
Yeah, here's the thing. These moderators aren't employed by Reddit. Reddit has no legal obligation to them. So here's what Reddit should do. Get rid of them. Take their moderator status. Get rid of their user thing.
I don't know.
Just totally get rid of them and put new moderators in there.
Yeah.
And even if you're switching moderators every couple months, you're still making it a lot harder for Big Brother to pay off those moderators to keep people in the dark about what's really going on.
Which you think is totally happening.
I think it's 100% what's happening. Absolutely.
But you don't have any evidence other than the fact that this happened.
I don't, but, you know, as in a lot of things...
That's pretty shaky evidence.
I know, but as in a lot of things, you use...
You rely on the gut feeling evidence and the THC.
You use the evidence you have now and right. What you've seen on a personal level to make a decision. That's not called taking... You know, that's called wisdom. I mean, people... do that all the time. That's the definition of wisdom.
Right.
Using your own personal experiences to what you know to be true
right.
to make a judgment about what's going on. I think that's what's going on to a point where I can say that I'm certain that's what's going on, simply because not just because I've seen verifiable, irrefutable proof of it.
Yeah.
But the fact is I've seen enough evidence and I know irrefutably the nature of man and the long arc of human history and how man always corrupts, always becomes corrupted, and always follows the money.
Yeah.
If someone's becoming corrupted, there's a lot of money involved. So to our listeners, to Reddit users, here's what you do. You go to r/undelete.
Yeah, I've never been there, actually.
Go to r/undelete, and it's people will keep posting what's being deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Until it just sticks and people stop. And you're only going to get 20 to 30 downvotes or upvotes, 20, 30 upvotes maybe per article, because people don't go there because they don't know about it. But r/undelete is basically where a couple users, you know, a couple dozen users and a couple moderators and admins take the time to scour Reddit for what's been buried or what's been removed, and they post it there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Mm-hmm. r/undelete.
I figured you'd find that story interesting, though. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I had a lot to say about it. I think that I use Reddit every day. It's my go-to for information about a lot of things, and for information about not just news, but things I enjoy, like Lord of the Rings and A Song of Ice and Fire and Legos, you know, and peanut butter. And
all adult things, yeah.
Our peanut butter. I've never been there. Going there now. Fill time.
As Matt visits our peanut butter. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and end the show because I said it was the last thing. So visit us online, tripodbroadcasting.com/givethatsomethought. Check us out on Twitter, @givethoughtshow. We'd love to interact with you there. Matt's on Twitter as well, @suburban_wizard. And I'm on Twitter, @AddisonTodd. We'd love to hear from you. We would love to... is there an our peanut butter?
Yeah, I'm looking at the top posts from this week.
Nice.
27 ways. It's only 4-0 votes for the past week. 27 ways to experience the holy matrimony of peanut butter and chocolate. I don't care. From BuzzFeed, no. All time, what's the top voting?
Well, that's probably it, yeah. No. It's probably a very un...
Our peanut butter. If not, I'm going to take a hold of the subreddit. It's going to be... Oh, the top... No.
What is it?
The top only has 18 of votes. I come to a subreddit of holiness to find it dead. I shall plant the seed of revival. Follow me, brethren. That's from a year ago.
So it's a dead subreddit.
It's a dead subreddit, but not anymore. Not anymore. to all your listeners out there, well, next we speak, our peanut butter will be alive and kicking, because I'm gonna get this going.
That's your promise to our listeners.
That's my promise.
Anyways,
it's a certified Matt guarantee.
Connect with us all over the place. We would love to hear from you about just about everything, anything in these shows, things like that. I do know that, like I said, our Frozen Pizza podcast on Trap Broadcasting, they had a new episode, I believe, yesterday.
Already on their fifth episode.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Yeah, you can check out audibletrial.com/trapoutbroadcasting, get a free audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
That'll support the show. Go also and listen to that last episode if you didn't listen to it. It was fascinating. It was really long. It was a really good episode.
It was our longest episode, almost 2 hours.
Yeah, I really enjoyed doing it, though. We talked about a lot of stuff.
Yep.
So, stuff like chemtrails, Atlantis,
mm-hmm.
Nazis.
Shadow people. Sleep paralysis. DMT.
Yeah. It's a great episode.
It was.
Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening, guys.
This has been a production of Tripod Broadcasting.